The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Web Studio, Primetime Advertising Corporation, and the Law Office of Thomas Pinkerton. The views and opinions are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent KCBQ or its sponsors. It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but Christians talk about love and are filled with hate. Well, yes, there has been much hypocrisy in the church over the years, so I am sympathetic to part of what you're saying. However, these days, the term hate regarding Christianity seems to be code for Proposition 8. Yes, Proposition 8 is in the news again. At first, the will of the people got struck down because the courts ruled that a law defining marriage as a union between a man and a woman was unconstitutional. That's pretty hairy, radical stuff. Defining marriage as a union between a man and a woman. Where did they come up with an idea like that? So it was struck down as unconstitutional. And for this reason, Proposition 8 went ahead and said, okay, well, we'll make it a part of the California Constitution. Now a judge is going to rule on whether or not our new Constitution is constitutional. It never ends. Some of you are saying, but Bob, isn't it important to speak against hate? Those who are against gay marriage are filled with hate, aren't they? With all due respect, that's quite a sweeping generalization. Have you met and conversed with every single person opposed to gay marriage? Have you allowed them to speak for themselves, or are you letting others filter and restate their opinions? And how exactly are you defining hate? I respect your desire to be loving, but please be careful here. Stop, take a deep breath, and notice the subtlety of what is going on. Otherwise, you may find yourself guilty of the same kinds of bigotry you claim to be against. You're thinking, yeah, but Bob, disapproving of homosexuality is like disapproving of an entire race because gay people were born that way. Actually, nothing of the sort has ever been proven. But even if you think it has, viewing sexuality as different than race or skin color isn't really that far of a stretch, is it? To use some common terms, can you yourself show compassion and tolerance for people who have a view of homosexuality contrary to your own? You're thinking, well, how can you speak of tolerance when we're suppressing the rights of gay people? Shouldn't they be allowed to marry? Nobody says they can't. Nobody says they can't. In fact, gay churches and other liberal churches have been performing homosexual weddings for years. All we ask is that they not force the rest of us to change our own definition of marriage. If they are entitled to their view of marriage, we are also entitled to ours. And I still know what you're thinking. You're going, yeah, but in most states, a gay marriage isn't recognized legally. That's true. That's true. But civil unions are. A civil union grants identical rights. There is no financial benefit denied and no hospital visitation suppressed. So legally, homosexual couples have the same rights, and religiously, depending upon the individual church, they have the affirmation of marriage. 10 years ago, militant gay activists, while fighting for civil unions, promised that this would be enough. That promise has been broken. I honestly appreciate your desire to be fair and compassionate. I really do. But please think about this for a moment. If gay couples can get married in liberal churches, and if they can also have legal civil unions, and if they decide to then call themselves married, as they have been doing for decades, and if nobody is passing any law against their free speech to describe their relationship any way they choose, what possible reason remains for demanding that the entire country change its definition of marriage other than to insist on affirmation from people who have a right to their own opinion about varying lifestyles? On to other news. Have you heard the latest? According to some of the internet chatter, that horrible earthquake in Haiti which killed, they're estimating now, over 50,000 people, some of the estimates, causing misery, heartache to millions. This earthquake has been blamed on, you guessed it, George W. Bush. It was only a matter of time. Yes, you can go on the internet and find websites that blame it on Bush. After all, they blamed him when Katrina hit, not merely for responding too slowly, but for the hurricane itself. What's next? Will they blame Bush for the ice age? It could also be his fault that dinosaurs are extinct, although personally, I think we should thank him for that one. News flash, Bush isn't president anymore. Let it go. Give it a rest. Perhaps it's time to start blaming somebody else every time a leaf falls from a tree. Or here's a radical idea. Maybe, just maybe, we can accept the fact that earthquakes and hurricanes happen at times apart from human influence, and then we won't need to blame anybody. Try it. Just try it before we carve our niche in history as the stupidest generation to ever grace this fair planet, a people brilliant in technological advancement, but naked of wisdom. This is a time to come together and to reach out a helping hand toward unthinking suffering. Conservatives need not blame Obama for this earthquake. Liberals need not blame Bush. And just to show you that I can be impartial, even though I'm a Christian, Christians need not explain to people why God allowed it. Let's just try to help. Yeah, the world can be overwhelming. So much going on, not only with natural disasters, but the economy of our own country and your own personal economy. In our zeal to bring you the news, we don't wish to be unsympathetic to your own personal plight. And here to speak on your behalf is a brand new regular on the Bob Siegel Show. Please welcome Maggie Money Matters.
You say your life is dull? All the fun and adventure is gone? Just try depositing your money in a bank. Today, most banks have a new rule of thumb, and chances are you, too, are experiencing this utter euphoria. All deposited checks, unless they come from the same bank, have a one-day hold put upon them. Okay, not as convenient as before, but no big deal, really. Who can't handle waiting just one day until his funds are available? Small stuff, right? Piece of cake. Of course, there are just a few minor, harmless qualifications to keep in mind. The one-day hold means one business day. So anything deposited on a Saturday counts as a deposit on a Monday. And now your funds are not available until Tuesday. Oh, yes, I almost forgot. All deposits after 4 o'clock p.m. are credited to the following business day. This means any check deposited after 4 o'clock on Friday counts for the following day, which is Saturday, which is not a business day, which means anything deposited late on Friday counts as Monday. And then with a hold, the funds are available on Tuesday. Of course, if Monday is one of those many three-day holidays, then anything deposited Friday after 4 o'clock is not available until Wednesday, because now we have to pretend the deposit took place on Tuesday. Okay, let's add this up. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. How many days does this make? According to your bank, it is a one-day hold. Who says you need to chase treasure around the world for an adventure? Just walk into your own humble bank, and life will be as thrilling and as dangerous as the latest installment of Indiana Jones.
build your own website without a lot of cost and trouble? Hi, I'm Bob Siegel, here to tell you about Web Studio. Web Studio allows people to create their own websites simply and easily without knowing HTML. With Web Studio, you avoid the learning curve of front page and the expense of a web designer. Web Studio has 14 different galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and everything else you need. For more information about Web Studio, go to webstudio.com.
Call Bob now at 888-344-1170. That's toll free, 888-344-1170. Bob may have strong opinions, but he also likes to hear what you have to say.
Welcome back. This is Intelligent Talk 1170 KCBQ, Bob Siegel hosting. We're going to bring on our guest, Dean Broyles, is president and chief counsel for the Western Center for Law and Policy. He was very involved in the passing of Proposition 8, teaming up with many people, including Pastor Jim Garlow of Skyline Church. Dean Broyles, welcome back to our program.
Great to be with you, Bob.
How are you? How was your New Year and Christmas?
You know, it was really good. We were able to get away for a few days in between Christmas and New Year's.
I'll bet in your line of work, with all that's going on, it probably feels good to take a break from it once in a while.
Oh, absolutely. I look forward to my end of the year break to kind of recalibrate and reset for the new year.
Well, I guess your batteries are getting just as charged as this little adventure continues. Could you start, Dean, and I know we've had you on a couple of times back when Proposition 8 was ready to pass. We were hoping it would pass. Run through just briefly the history of this and bring us up to date with where we are, just in terms of how it all began in California, why there was a Prop 8, and up to the present ruling that we're going to be waiting for.
Sure, sure. Well, Prop 22, which was a statute that defined marriage between one man and one woman, was passed in the year 2000. And it was in effect until it was challenged in state court and ultimately overturned at the Supreme Court in 2008. But even before that ruling occurred, the effort to put Prop 8 on the ballot as a constitutional amendment, which would in effect be a higher law than the statute that was Prop 22, that whole effort began because we were not sure what was going to happen with the California Supreme Court. California Supreme Court overturned Prop 22, and in the meantime, rather than staying their opinion knowing that Prop 8 was going to be on the ballot in November, they went ahead and slammed through legalizing same-sex marriage for a period of about 4 or 5 months, which was a very unwise decision. And by November, the people voted, and 7 million Californians voted to retain the definition of marriage as one man, one woman, as it's always been for the last 5,000 years of civilized history. And so after Prop 8 passed, there was another challenge in the state courts that went to the state Supreme Court. The state Supreme Court ruled that we, the people, actually have the right to amend our Constitution and any way we want to, and they upheld Prop 8. And so the only thing left in California for the advocates of same-sex marriage to do was either to mount a legislative attack to overturn Prop 8 by basically repealing it and having a new constitutional amendment which would define marriage to include same-sex couples, or which they're trying to do right now in the background. But the big thing that's happening right now in California is that federally a lawsuit's been filed to challenge Prop 8 as violating a higher law, which is the United States Constitution under the Equal Protection Clause. And so what the same-sex marriage advocates are attempting to do is to wrap themselves basically in the black civil rights movement and have the court step in and help homosexual couples designed to call their relationships marriage, similarly to overturning civil rights laws. But as you talked about earlier, I believe before I came on the show, there's huge differences between the African-American community and what they faced in our nation's history and what homosexual couples are dealing with today. And we can get into those more later. But
yeah, it just seems to be kind of a wild card that they always play.
Oh, absolutely. And there's just, you know, like you said earlier, there's been a lot of scientific efforts to prove that homosexuality, like race, is immutable. In other words, it's caused by, you know, your DNA or your blood or your brain or something. And in spite of multiple attempts to prove it such, they've been unsuccessful. Now, as a matter of fact, the American Psychiatric Association has backed off of that whole concept. And there's a lot of differences between, obviously, race and homosexual conduct that we could point out. But the bottom line is that race is very different than sexuality. And certainly it's our opinion that there's a choice involved with homosexual conduct, whereas a person cannot choose to be black or not to be black, obviously, unless you're Michael Jackson and have a lot of money.
Yeah, that's interesting. Now, I have to say, I'm surprised that the California higher courts upheld Proposition 8. It wouldn't have surprised me at all if they'd just overturned it again. But now it's at the, I guess, the bottom of the line in rising up in the federal courts then.
Well, yeah, yes, and the reason the Supreme Court upheld Prop 8 is because the people, you know, the foundation of government is the Constitution, but even above the Constitution is the people's right to define or redefine what their Constitution is and what it means. And so the people of the state of California had the absolute right to define marriage constitutionally, and the Supreme Court of the state could not declare a constitutional amendment unconstitutional because they would be putting themselves as above the law and above the right of the people to amend the Constitution.
So, well, Dean, that makes sense to you and that makes sense to me. I didn't think I'd live to see the day when that would make sense to a California judge.
Well, yeah, I think you would have seen rioting in the streets if Prop 8 would have been struck down by the
Possibly.
State Supreme Court. And I think they knew they would be way overstepping their bounds and doing something that was historically unprecedented.
Well, good
because
for them.
Ultimately, the right and power of government is in the people's hands, not in judges' hands.
Yeah, I'm just glad they remembered what their job really was. Now, what is your appraisal of what's going on right now? How is the case going now? Do you feel that those continuing to argue for upholding Prop 8 are getting a fair shake? What's your prediction of what's going to happen?
Well, I think, you know, there's some negative signs that have occurred so far. The first was the fact that Judge Vaughn Walker, the federal district court judge in San Francisco, was trying to have the trial televised, which...
Some would say that would have been a good thing. Why do you think that would have been a not-so-good thing to have it televised?
Well, because a lot of the witnesses, because we live in such a politically correct atmosphere today, I think a lot of the witnesses for the traditional marriage.
Oh, they would have been afraid to come forward because they'd have been afraid about their houses being vandalized. Oh, of course. Of course.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I don't know if you recall, but after Prop 8 passed and in the waning days before the election, there was a lot of intimidation and harassment and actually some threats of violence that were occurring. So
there certainly were, and it was all in the name of tolerance, ironically.
That's right. The irony is those begging for the court now for tolerance are sometimes the most intolerable and hateful people that you ever meet.
They certainly are. So that was one negative thing, it going on TV. What else in your appraisal of the current court case?
Well, yeah. And a lot of people don't know this, but the Supreme Court in a 5-4 decision just a few days ago decided that cameras would not be allowed in the courtroom. In a 5-4 decision, it was Kennedy, Scalia, Thomas, and Roberts and Alito on the side of not allowing cameras versus Breyer, Stevens, Ginsburg, and not surprisingly, Sotomayor. So the reason I'm pointing that out is because most people predict that the Supreme Court will ultimately get this case. Whoever wins in the trial court or whoever wins at the Ninth Circuit, this case will certainly, almost certainly go to the United States Supreme Court.
Yeah, so it's going to go to the U.S. Supreme Court one way or the other, whether we win or lose this.
That's right.
Do you think the court will take it or try to send it back down as they so often have done in other cases?
No, I think it depends on how it comes up to them, but I think the court will take it, and I think this 5-4 vote kind of shows where the lines will fall when the case comes before them. Before the current Supreme Court, the expansion of the Equal Protection Clause that the same-sex marriage advocates are arguing for right now is historically and legally unprecedented. So they're asking for basically a redefinition of the Equal Protection Clause and what equal protection means and applied to same-sex couples. And it's a radical departure, much like Roe versus Wade was a radical departure of current law as to what the right to privacy meant in 1973 when it was passed. So I think what's going to happen is it'll ultimately be decided by the U.S. Supreme Court. And if the current court is in place, when it's decided, same-sex legal advocates will lose, and that's why the ACLU and some other liberal groups were trying to beg Olson, the two attorneys, Olson and David Boies, to not take the case at this point because they felt like ultimately they would lose and it would really slam the door and set their movement back 10 to 15 years legally.
And Dean Broyles, if that happens and the Supreme Court makes such a ruling, how does that affect the many other states in our union who have also upheld marriage between a man and a woman? Does that end up settling the issue nationally, or do they just find some technicality with which to make it look like, well, this was just about California, but other states are still free game?
Yeah, that's a very good question. Putting the federal case aside for a moment, it's really a state-specific issue. And it's one of those issues that really, under our United States Constitution, under the 10th Amendment, should be left to the states to decide. And that's what I've been predicting for months, is that same-sex marriage will basically be a very hard-fought, if not bloody, state-by-state battle. And unless it's decided federally that they're allowed, that under the federal Constitution, same-sex marriage is basically mandated under the Equal Protection Clause, then it will be a state-by-state issue. And I think ultimately that's how it's going to fall down. As important as this federal case is, if we lose it, if we win it, it still just means that we're going to continue to have to battle it out in every state.
Dean, before you go, on a related issue, the hate crimes bill that passed the House and the Senate nationally, your opinion on that? I know that there were things added in regarding homosexuality.
Yeah, I mean, I've done some analysis and speaking on the topic, and basically the long-term concern with how it's written is that the narrow exemptions for religious organizations that are in the hate crimes bill will ultimately be removed from the law or removed kind of legislatively from the bench by some judges, and ultimately it could begin to silence Christian ministers and others, like you saw in Sweden with Åke Green being arrested and thrown in jail for preaching from Romans 1. So I don't think that's going to be happening tomorrow under the current federal hate crimes legislation, but I think over time we're going to see it watered down and changed so that you'll start seeing threats to the First Amendment, threats to pastors being able to preach freely according to the dictates of their religion and according to Scripture.
Well, one of the things that was abominable is that they attached it to the back of a military spending bill so that they could get Republicans and conservatives to vote for it.
Yeah, and that's truly unfortunate. And again, there are some exceptions in the law right now so that I don't think we're going to see massive, you know, prosecution or arrests of Christians tomorrow under the hate crimes legislation. But I think it's definitely trending in a very bad and draconian direction.
Dean Broyles, thank you so much for taking the time. We'll have you on again soon. Let's keep this relationship and these updates going and keep us informed.
All right. Thank you, Bob.
Take care and Happy New Year. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show. We'll be right back. Thank you. This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539, W&S Electric. Welcome back. Welcome to the Bob Siegel Show. Well, Katie Couric just won the CBS School of Journalism's Alfred I. DuPont Award for her 2009 interview with Sarah Palin. Couric has been praised for over a year now as the woman who nailed Sarah. You all heard that Sarah was nailed. I don't know how many people are reminding themselves of exactly what constituted nailing. You see, when Palin was asked for an example of her running mate John McCain trying to warn Congress that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac needed more oversight, the kind of stuff that created our financial debacle. Well, Palin offered one example of John McCain warning them. She did not offer two. Oh, my goodness gracious, land sakes alive. She can only come up with one example and not two. Well, Couric pressed her for a second example and later on in the interview brought it up even again, saying, I don't mean to belabor the point, but, and then, of course, she continued to belabor the point by asking the same question again. Couric also got kudos because Palin did not feel like listing examples of newspapers and magazines she has read. Of course, she's written some articles in some of the newspapers and magazines Katie Couric has read. Great job, Katie. I guess the CBS School of Journalism didn't catch your other big interview of 2009 with that alternative vice presidential nominee, Joe Biden. Good old Joe. Joe talked to Katie about Franklin Roosevelt going on television when the stock market crashed to talk to the American people. Katie smiled and went right on with the interview, failing to point out that Hoover, not Roosevelt, was president when the stock market crashed. Oh, yes, yes. American families owned radios in those days, not television sets. Oh, well, I suppose that isn't as important as Sarah providing one John McCain example instead of two. So let me see if I'm understanding this. Let's add it all up. Biden displays the worst knowledge of history since Lumpy Rutherford flunked his junior year on Leave It to Beaver. Katie Couric either chooses to let it go, which should disqualify her as an objective journalist, or herself does not understand a fairly pivotal event of American history, which would make her about as ignorant as her elite media peers seem to think Sarah Palin is. Either way, it does not speak well of Katie or the award. Hey, maybe next year the Alfred I. DuPont Prize will be given to the first one who finds it buried in the bottom of a box of Cracker Jack. If you'd like to weigh in on any of this, our call-in toll-free number 1-888-344-1170. That's 1-888-344-1170. You can also reach me by email, questions@bobsiegel.net, questions@bobsiegel.net. And kicking and screaming as I keep being dragged into the computer age a space at a time, you can now get a hold of me on Facebook. Well, this is from Jim in San Diego responding to last week's radio show. He says, Bob, I heard your commentary on the radio about climate change. It seems ironic that as a Christian, you take such a cavalier and unconcerned position with regard to God's creation. We have been blessed with a beautiful world and many incredibly talented and insightful scientists, the vast majority of whom tell us that the scope, scale, and speed of changes in the environment are unprecedented. We are destroying an amazing gift that we have been given. We can't continue to mistreat the earth and expect no consequences. You, of all people, should realize this. It's a shame that you chose to ignore your responsibility to help people see this truth and encourage them to treat the natural world with the respect it and the Creator deserve. After all, they are one and the same thing. Well, thank you for your letter, Jim, and thank you for listening. I do appreciate it, and I'm glad you felt free to express your opinion. Actually, Jim, if you have listened to my radio show or read my blogs for any length of time, and maybe you haven't, but if you have, if anybody has, then they would know that as a Christian, I do take our responsibility toward this planet and its environment seriously, and I have spoken that many times. If not, if you're not aware of this, then please understand, this is just basic Radio 101. When you're listening to a radio show, and I know some people hear parts of it while they're driving or they get turned on to a new show and they haven't heard the history, but you need to know, in radio, one never knows everything a person believes from one program. There's always a context in relationship to other radio broadcasts. Now, to respond more specifically to what you're talking about, the problem is that many scientists do not believe the world is warming, and they are being censored. The problem also is that some of the ones who claim global warming have been caught perpetrating fraudulent data. The problem continues when others alter the premise of the argument midstream because they cannot ignore the fact that these last few years the world has actually been cooling. And that's what I was talking about last week. That's what Jim's referring to when I said that they're throwing in the gauntlet for global warming and they're just calling it climate change. And I made the statement that one thing about climate, it always changes. So if you use the word climate change, you're always right. Anyway, Jim, in the midst of a horrible economy and a government that wants to tax companies more to make them greener, should we be better sure of our facts? We need to allow all scientists, and I'm not claiming to be a scientist, I do know that we need to allow all scientists to discuss and debate, yet Al Gore keeps insisting the debate is over. As a Christian, I am also concerned when free speech is suppressed. Incidentally, Jim, as for your other comment about God and the world being the same thing, the Bible does not teach that God and the world are one and the same. It teaches that God created the world. The Bible teaches that God is a sentient being independent from his own creation. He created not only the world, but the entire universe. We will answer to him someday. It's not like we're all part of God. There's a philosophy called pantheism, and there are religions in Eastern mysticism, many facets of Hinduism being one example, pantheism, which teaches that there is no difference between God and the universe. But that's not what the Bible teaches. Now, Jim, of course, you're entitled to believe whatever you want, but since you seem to be challenging my consistency as a Christian, I thought I'd clarify that true Bible-believing Christians are not pantheists because no such teaching is found in the Bible. Should we respect creation? Yes. Do we believe that God and creation are one and the same thing? No. Now, folks, Jim has since written me another letter. Usually when I get a letter like this, I read it over the air. I don't usually have time to respond by email. I did already respond to Jim by email, and he responded very graciously, but has since written me another letter. I'm going to get to it next week, though, because I don't want to be unfair to other emails that we have today. For today, we're going to move on because, as you know, some people in this world don't even get one letter read on the radio. How unfair if I were to read two from the same person. One letter a week, it's only fair. This is from Lauren, who writes all the way from Iowa. And he was responding, you heard part of it in my opening monologue, but there was a much larger piece, which I wrote for San Diego Rostra. And let me tell you how to find that. Just type in sandiegorostra.com. I'm a regular contributor now for the San Diego Rostra and the San Diego Newsroom, but this is in the Rostra. And I wrote a piece which defended the position of Proposition 8. And it wasn't just the stuff I was talking about on the air. It was much more detailed. I defended our position psychologically. I defended it morally. I defended it legally, consistently. I made every attempt to defend it compassionately. And Lauren is responding to my passionate plea. I will read to you what Lauren has to say. Lauren is a gay psychiatrist who's married in the state of Iowa. So obviously this is of great interest to him. I will read to you Lauren's letter when we return to the Bob Siegel Show.
How many times have you heard the phrase, "they're all the same," applied to local contractors? It is unfortunate that a few can tarnish the reputations of many, but it sure is nice when you find a contractor with godly principles. But what if they only do floors or only the painting? What if you want to build a whole new home, or you want someone to fully complete your remodel or tenant improvements? You need ProBuilt. Serving San Diego since 1987, residential and commercial, quality work completed on time. Local Christian businessman and president of ProBuilt, Jim Bell, said, "When people pay you to do a job, they simply want you to do the job. They expect quality work, and they expect it to be done on time. We do that at ProBuilt." For references and dozens of pictures of both residential and commercial work, visit our website, ProBuiltInc.com. That's ProBuiltInc.com. Or call our El Cajon office at 619-593-2965. We're fully bonded and insured. California State License Number 567925. ProBuilt.
I'd like to remind all of my listeners that the Bob Siegel Show has a sister program on our sister station, KPRZ 1210 on the dial. Every Sunday morning from 9 o'clock to 9:30, you can hear City Voice. On this provocative program, my good friend George Runyon interviews a different local Christian ministry every week. You can listen to the show while driving to church, and don't be surprised, you may find it so interesting that you'll stay in the parking lot continuing to listen and skipping those Sunday school donuts. That's City Voice with George Runyon every Sunday morning from 9 o'clock to 9:30 on our sister station, KPRZ 1210. But right now, you're listening to KCBQ 1170. Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. You can reach me, questions at bobsiegel.net. This is from Lauren in Iowa. It's a response to some of the things that you hear me say all the time on the radio, including today as we talked about Prop 8, but also a much more longer detailed article that I put on San Diego Roster that's stirring up a lot of controversy. Just go in there and read the comments. And Lauren says, and I should say he's writing in a very friendly, respectful tone. He says, "I am hardly a gay militant, but I am a gay man, legally married in Iowa to my partner of 23 years in a loving, committed, and monogamous relationship. I was previously married and have children. After our wedding, my daughter came up to me, threw her arms around me, and said, 'Dad, I have been so wrong. Your relationship has always been about loving each other, not just sex.' Although she has lived most of her life knowing and accepting my husband as a part of her life, our marriage changed her. It has also changed us. It may be true that children are best raised in homes with two loving parents, but the reality is that most are not. Many are raised in homes of single parents. My mother was a widow. Many homes have two parents and have damaged their children through abuse. I am a psychiatrist, and I know that two parents does not guarantee that a child will be raised in a healthy home." Now, I'm going to stop. He has more, but I need to respond to this. You need to all understand, in my article, I made it very clear that I wasn't comparing a two-parent gay marriage with a one-parent heterosexual marriage or an abusive heterosexual marriage. I said all things being equal, assuming it's a two-parent heterosexual marriage, I considered that healthier than a homosexual marriage. So we're really talking about apples and oranges here. He's making the point that, well, what about somebody that lives in an abusive home? Well, of course we don't want somebody to be in an abusive home. But that had already been acknowledged in my argument. So it's kind of a red herring. But I understand people do this sincerely. It's such an emotional, volatile issue that sometimes you read an article and certain things jump out and you don't even see everything. Anyway, Lauren continues, Doug and I were married in our church, surrounded by a congregation of people who love and accept us. I have served as a deacon in our church. Our reception was for 300 people, most of them heterosexual and open and affirming to our relationship. Our wedding sermon was about two things. One, love God and love one another. Two, God is still speaking to us and has many truths to unfold. Please send me a copy of The Gay Agenda. I have never seen it, nor do I even know anyone else who has. Lovingly and in Christ, Lauren. Well, first of all, Lauren, I mentioned a good place to start The Gay Agenda. I mentioned the book in my article, After the Ball. It's in the article. It's quoted in the article. And it can still be found in places like Amazon.com. That would be a good place to start. Now, Lauren, you went out of your way to talk about the fact that you go to a church. It is true that there are many liberal churches and gay churches which do not take the Bible seriously when the Bible talks about homosexuality. I understand they would claim that they do. You talked about how they mentioned that God is a God of love. The Bible does say that God is a God of love. It also says that God is a judge, that God is a God of wrath. And I'm not talking about you specifically. All of us have sinned. The Bible mentions homosexuality as one kind of sin. I have my sins too, Lauren. And I do think that any time in history when Christians have singled out homosexuality and acted as if it's more sinful than anything else, then that was very unfair. And I don't blame a lot of gay people for wanting to reject Christianity. But the answer was never to just excuse the sin or pretend the sin doesn't exist. Because the moment somebody starts quoting Scripture and saying they believe in the Bible, they're obligated to go with the whole Bible. And in Romans chapter 1, it says that men gave up natural relations with men and had, or they gave up natural relations with women, I should say, and then instead chose to have relationships with men. It lists it as a sin. I know people try to reinterpret that, but you literally have to do mental gymnastics and make those words stand on their heads to make them mean anything other than what they really mean. Now, I should also say, Lauren, that your story, emotional and sympathetic as it sounds, it doesn't really respond to the points I made in my article about the suppression of free speech. Okay, your daughter accepts you. Of course that makes you happy. And Lauren, I don't wish you any unhappiness, but the issue of gay marriage is far more complicated than that. I'm sure that everybody in the audience would agree, however, that Lauren's a very sympathetic person. And I wish you, Lauren, the best in life. I mean that. Thank you for writing, and take care, my friend. This next letter on the same subject is from Michael. He says, so we've now set the precedent that we can amend the state's constitution to define marriage, and we are fighting hard for that power in court. Assume our fight is won. What happens in 10 years when the other side has enough votes? So he's acknowledging that he's on the side of Proposition 8. But Michael's trying to say evidently that he's frustrated with this process. So he says, assume our fight is won. What happens in 10 years when the other side has enough votes to reamend the Constitution to suit their agenda? How do we fight that? Do we fight it in court by saying it is unconstitutional after we fought hard saying it is? Hard cases make bad law. And here is an example. By voting for Prop 8, we gave the government power over a religious institution. There is a very real possibility this will come back to bite us. Buckle up, everyone. Well, Michael, what would you consider the alternative? Are we as Christians and conservatives supposed to just sit back and watch our own rights being taken away in the name of other people's rights? If we live in a democratic society, we are entitled to have our voices heard too, especially with a constitution that guarantees freedom of speech, a right being taken away in the name of tolerance. And folks, I hope you'll go on the San Diego roster and read my article, because I made it clear that my main concern here was the elimination of freedom of speech. There is an agenda, and it does exist. It's already passed in Canada. Our guest, Dean Broyles, attorney, mentioned about how there was already a pastor that was arrested in Sweden over this. The right to say homosexuality is wrong, and bringing about the day when it is against the law to speak ill of homosexuality is the militant gay agenda. Now, not all gay people, and I made that distinction in my article. I believe most gay people just want to live in peace and be left alone. Lauren from Iowa doesn't seem to be aware of any gay agenda. I believe him. I'm sure that Lauren just wants to live his life in peace. But even though the militant gay agenda may be the minority of the larger homosexual community, They're making the loudest noise, and as the old saying goes, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. They're getting the attention of judges. And so in the name of tolerance, there's an intolerance against another position. That's a subtlety that we should all catch. We'll talk more about this and read other letters when we return to the Bob Siegel Show. Bob Siegel inviting you to tune in for the Rick Amato Show four nights a week here on 1170 KCBQ. Rick stays on top of the issues local and national. He also does some of the most stimulating interviews you've ever heard. That's the Rick Amato Show Monday through Thursdays from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. here on Intelligent Talk 1170 KCBQ. You can also find Rick on AmatoTalk.com.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Welcome to the last segment of our program. I've been reading some email responses, comments to my article for San Diego Roster entitled, If You Think Gay Marriage Will Not Affect You, Think Again. And there are even some people who personally don't believe in gay marriage, but they don't want to see us fight this fight. This is from somebody who's using kind of a nickname. He calls himself SD at Heart. SD at Heart says, I'm a Republican. A hardcore Republican who has spent thousands of hours fighting for the Republican cause, and I support gay marriage. My reason is simple. I believe in limited government, and I think the government has no business telling people who they should or should not marry. Well, SD, the problem is there are already people going into churches telling pastors who they are or are not allowed to marry. And I put this in my article. In New Jersey, where they don't even have gay marriage as legal, there was a church that would not allow a couple to have a civil union ceremony, and they were sued, and they won the lawsuit. The church lost the lawsuit. The gay couple won the lawsuit. So if you're concerned about government interfering with our lives, we don't want to misplace that concern. So again, he says, we Republicans tell the government to stay out of our lives. Why not do the same with marriage? I believe, says SD, I believe the only role the government should have in marriage is as the body who legalizes the contract between the two people. For this, why don't we have everyone use civil unions? As you said, Bob, it gives everyone the same rights as marriage. Leave marriage to the churches where, if you choose, you can be married before God. Well, again, they're not leaving it before the churches, SD. That's the problem. Anyway, he says, but for those who simply want to live their life together and enjoy the same rights as everyone else, let them. Why don't we concentrate on eliminating overbearing laws and regulations rather than creating new ones? Respectfully. And I do appreciate the fact that he wrote this respectfully. Respectfully, SD at Heart, straight, married, Republican, volunteer, and donor. Well, let me respond to the straight, married, Republican, volunteer, and donor as the straight, divorced Democrat who always votes Republican. That's me, your humble host. SD, inasmuch as the militant gay agenda has as its goal the eradication of free speech for those who have a different view of homosexuality, with gay marriage merely being a step along the way, and inasmuch as churches are being sued, I would say I am concentrating on eliminating overbearing laws and regulations. These points were also made in my article, but were not addressed. I appreciate you writing, however. Now, this one is from Patty, who's written us before all the way from Italy, and this is not about gay marriage. It's regarding Haiti. And the comments I made earlier on the show that we need to stop the blame game. The liberals are blaming Bush. The conservatives are blaming Obama. We even have people like Pat Robertson trying to explain why God allowed it. And I just said that, you know, instead of doing the blame game, why don't we all just try to help out by sending money or whatever it is you can do. So Patty in Italy says, thanks, Bob. Yes, we need to do what we can. I was horrified and embarrassed by what Pat Robertson said. even if it was a judgment from God, who is he to say? My goodness, the arrogance. Well, I like Pat Robertson, I should say, but that doesn't mean I'm always going to agree with everything he says. Well, folks, last week I was reading some questions from our friend Alex in the United Kingdom. We've read his questions before, and he sent me a bunch in response to other answers I gave. And I kind of left off right in the middle of something that I want to pick up now, where he was raising the issue of how does God deal with the people who never heard of Christ if people are expected to accept him. And, of course, my first answer is the Bible comments clearly on how God will deal with those who knew or strongly suspected that Jesus was real but pushed him away because they preferred to live a life of sin. Those who pushed Jesus away for those reasons do not spend an eternity with God. They spend it separated from God, what the Bible calls hell. On the other hand, if we're talking about somebody who had problems with hypocrisy or was ignorant or lived in a part of the country where they just never heard, well, the Bible does say something about ignorance. I wish we had more verses like this, but it is in there. So I think it presents perhaps a clue. Acts 17 says the times of ignorance God has overlooked. Now, for more detail, I have a whole chapter in my book, I'd Like to Believe in Jesus. Alex, just say the word. I'd be happy to send you a free copy. And for other listeners, info about this book can be found by going to my website, bobsiegel.net, or just go to amazon.com. It's called I'd Like to Believe in Jesus, But... meaning I'd like to believe in Jesus, but what about this? What about that? How do we know the resurrection is true? How can a loving God send people to hell? Where do you get the nerve to say Jesus is the only way? It's subtitled The Harder, Less Frequently Discussed Questions, and I think you'll find this book very, very helpful. I've just gotten so many positive responses by people who said it answered a lot of their questions. They've given it to non-believing friends, seeing their non-believing friends pray to receive Christ. There's been a great response to this book. So, Alex, I'll send you one for free. If one of the rest of you want one for free, you're going to have to be nice to me somehow. Call me up next week. Tell me what a great guy I am. Butter me up. Call me when the Super Bowl's going on. Tell me you love my show so much, you're willing to give up the Super Bowl. I'll bet it's worth it for the free book. And there's people are sitting, is this guy out of his mind? We're going to give up the Super Bowl for his stupid book? Could we care less? All right, enough of that. There is another question from Alex. Now, Alex was asking me about the age of the earth and how it supposedly the generations that we add up in the Bible for the age of the earth contradict paleontology. I had mentioned to him that I don't believe we really know the age of the earth from the Bible because Genesis chapter 1 was written as a poem. And even with Adam and Eve, I mentioned that Adam and Eve, before they fell into sin, lived immortally. And God commanded them to be fruitful and multiply. And even though it takes us only 2 minutes to read chapters 2 and 3 of Genesis, that doesn't mean they only lived in the garden for 2 minutes. So I said, well, how do we know Adam and Eve didn't live in the garden for millions of years? Anyway, he goes on, he says, okay, Adam and Eve could have been in the garden for millions of years, but I think that is far-fetched and is not specifically said in the Bible. Therefore, it's only a person's opinion. Well, you're partly right, Alex. It's not specifically said, but it's not merely an opinion. It's an opinion based on observation. When Cain was banished, Cain was the first child born to Eve after she left the garden. People always assume that Cain was her first child. That's not true. Cain was her first child born in pain. Cain was her first child born in mortality. Now, why do I say that? Because when Cain was banished by God, Cain expressed concern to God about all these people he was going to meet all over the world who could hurt him. Well, what people was he talking about if the only three people were Adam, Eve, and him? Where did these other people come from? And again, the command to be fruitful and multiply was given to Adam and Eve while they were in the garden. Why assume that they did not obey this command? Well, we have another question from Alex, one more, and I'll read that next week. You are always welcome. Your questions are welcome, too.
Thank you for listening to The Bob Siegel Show. The views and opinions are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent KCBQ or its sponsors. The Bob Siegel Show was brought to you in part by the Law Office of Thomas Pinkerton, helping infertile families have children. Tom Pinkerton would like to invite you to help Bob expand his radio program by donations or sponsorship. For more information about Bob's ministry, go to www.bobsiegel.net. Here, you can read Bob's articles and get information about Bob's books. That's Bob Siegel, SIEGEL.net.